Bessie DeVos compared the right to having an abortion to the right to own slaves, saying both are viewed as a vast moral evil. She is the head of education, the Department of Education for the Trump administration, and as could be imagined, there are a lot of people on the left that did not like her comment. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. We're going to talk about this right now with Dr. Matthew Meehan, who is a teacher or professor at Hillsdale in the D.C. Chapter of Hillsdale College. And Dr. Meehan, it's great to have you back on. I understand your specialty is in the realm of education.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure. And so you're very knowledgeable about Bessie DeVos and controversy surrounding her and so forth. So let's start with her remarks about, you know, basically comparing Roe v. Wade of 1973 of the Supreme Court with, say, Dred Scott of 1757. Both examples of judicial activism where the Supreme Court went way beyond whatever is written in the Constitution.
No, that's right. I think it's a very sort of poignant and on-the-money comparison. And just thinking in terms of educative prudence from her standpoint, the crisis of slavery and the mistreatment of Black Americans through that ordeal and the civil all the way up through the civil rights movement is something that actually Americans are fairly well educated on. So in order to try to help people have the right perspective about the abortion issue, I think it's a smart move because it's really drawing on a fairly undepleted reservoir of memory and knowledge about our civic history.
That's a very good point. Now, do you think most people realize that abortion, you know, became legal in America just by judicial fiat?
No, I don't think so. I think there's definitely the rhetoric of the sort of the clamoring masses were then sort of released from their bondage to be free to abort children with Roe v. Wade. So they know about the case, but it's usually sort of the time had come. Everyone was ready for this to change.
It's interesting, too. The Supreme Court, in some ways, maybe thought, oh, okay, well, we'll just go ahead, make this ruling, and that'll change it. And that'll close the debate. The debate has been anything but closed since January 22, 1973. If anything, they unleashed this huge, you know, argument on both sides of the abortion debate.
No, that's right. I mean, the two dissenting justices, God bless them, Justice White and Rehnquist, right? White said this was an extravagant exercise of judicial power, sort of predicting that there would be a backlash. And then Rehnquist said this is legislation and not judicial judgment. So, you know, those two things were very prescient, and that's what we've had is a kind of outcry of judicial supremacy and the removal of the actual legislative process where you rationally deliberate about this thing. And I think there is great cause to surmise that if we had been able to debate this thing clearly and gotten the facts out on the table in a legislative way where everyone's discussing the thing thoughtfully, that we probably would have come up with a different answer, that this is, in fact, a redux of the violation of civil rights of a minority, a tyrannized minority, just like slavery.
Any comments on the blowback that Secretary DeVos has received for her comments?
I mean, look, she's going to catch it for anything she does.
Well, that's true, too.
Because of her opinions about the basic education establishment and her positions on school choice, which we've discussed before. But, you know, I think that it's interesting that the president came to her defense at the March for Life in a sort of subtle little way when he said that together we are the voice of the voiceless. I'm here quoting. He said, when it comes to abortion, and you know this, you've seen what's happened. Democrats have embraced the most radical and extreme positions taken and seen in this country for years and decades. And then he adds, and you could even say for centuries, right? This sort of this little sort of presidential master trolling which is to say that you know, this stifling the voice of the voiceless that is abortion, it's the same thing. We've had it for centuries, because what we've seen now, and my colleague Matt Spaulding wrote an article and ahead of the March for Life talking about this as well, that some of the legislation that's come down recently on abortion, particularly in Kansas, New York, and Illinois, are changing the rhetoric of abortion to it's problematic, it's difficulty. You know, the old Clinton mantra of abortion needs to be safe and rare, which was very similar to the original founding fathers. If they did make an excuse for it and they didn't condemn it, they'd say it was a necessary evil. We hope it expires over time when the wilds of the land have been settled. But as time went on in both of these sort of deep violations or national sins against natural rights, they both started to make it a positive good. You know, the Calhoun and a lot of Southern apologists saw slavery as a positive way to establish the poor whites' rights. And this was a great good that brought, you know, a cohesion to our citizenry, by having an underclass to support them. And now you see Kansas is, just said that the abortion is a natural right protected in the Declaration of Independence and in Kansas's own state constitution, because it's the part of the pursuit of liberty and the natural rights, ignoring the child's rights in favor of the woman's.
You know, I'm surprised. I can understand New York. I can understand Vermont, Maine, you know, et cetera. But Kansas, that is amazing. And by the way, you know, talking about the Declaration of Independence, it says that, you know, the Creator has given us the right to life. And if you don't have the right to life, all the other rights are meaningless.
Right. Yeah, it's selective. And really, when you think of the Civil Rights Act, you know, a decade prior had been trying to finally equalize everything. And then Roe v. Wade introduces special rights for women over children in the womb, right, to kill them, and that was it's precisely that kind of special right of whites to enslave blacks, and here we introduce special rights again, just a decade later. So they're right back at the same bad habit. It's just transferred to a new underclass. But yeah, I mean, with regard to Kansas, I love Kansas. I'm Missourian by birth. I have lots of friends in Kansas, so I don't mean to dog the people of Kansas. But there's something about Kansas elites that almost a chip on their shoulder that they try to outdo their lefty brethren.
Oh.
And it's a kind of – it's an ugly imitation, and they go even further. So hopefully that can be reversed over time.
That sounds almost like, let's say, Austin – Texas. Austin is not representative of the rest of Texas, although that's where the representatives sit. You know, in other words, you do have an elite type mentality within Austin itself. That's interesting. Where's the seat of power within Kansas? Forgive my ignorance. I forgot. Topeka? No. Pardon me?
The
capital.
You mean of the
of Kansas.
State capital?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, the seat of cultural power is Kansas City, but Topeka is the capital.
Okay, and I know that I can't remember the name of the city, but they used to have the most notorious of all the abortionists, and then he was murdered in church, no less. You know, that was an amazing story out of Kansas, Wichita. I don't know if you remember that, but anyway, let's focus a little bit on some of Betsy DeVos's detractors. I imagine she is not appreciated by the teachers' union, but the teachers' union, the NEA, is extremely liberal, and it's my understanding they're very pro-abortion.
Yeah, in fact, they just went so far as to, I think, endorse abortion as a union officially just recently, which I don't know enough to know what the, if there was any kind of chicken and egg relationship between those two, but it is interesting that for the first time, the union really, as a national union, came forward in favor of abortion. So, which is, you know, that's rough, especially for teachers. You know, 60% of the country is leaning against abortion now, and these are compelled compelled dues you have to pay.
Yeah.
In many instances. So, you know.
And they're talking about.
And you can't separate it out. So now they're advocating for abortion, and you're stuck advocating for abortion. And I believe the Supreme Court just. I wrote in the Wall Street Journal about this recently about unions not forcing people to speak up. Union members being forced to pay out dues that pay for speech that they don't agree with.
Yeah.
So they might run into some trouble here.
It's interesting, too. Just think about this economically. In effect, isn't the teachers' union saying, we don't care about these future customers? I mean, in other words, they're aborting kids. Those kids will one day grow up and fill their schools.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure a lot of them are looking at teen pregnancy and kids having trouble finishing high school because of a birth of a baby and things like that. And so you can kind of understand it from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, I don't think it excuses it, but it makes it in some sense understandable. But what's not understood about by anybody in this issue is when you suppress life, you suppress a human being's mind and heart. And that is, you know, Aristotle's got this great line, more is better, right? The more people who think something through, the better it is, which is the argument for a polity, like a democratic republic like our own, getting everybody together to discuss something. You're actually going to get to a better answer when you have more people thinking it through. And that's just true. The more you have of these lives, the more you're actually going to have a fuller and more vibrant community. And they don't believe that anymore. They just don't think human beings made in the image and likeness of God are a net benefit. So it's a very pessimistic view in the end, despite all the claims of humanitarian desires to help women and things like that.
It's interesting, too, that when the Supreme Court made their decision in January of 1973, the technology available to them was certainly not as well focused as it is today. So we have sonograms, we have ultrasounds, we have, I've heard from, you know, former abortionists who said, whatever you do, don't let a potential, you know, a woman who's going to be getting an abortion, don't let her see the sonogram or the ultrasound because she might change her mind. And we look at the famous example of Abby Johnson leaving Planned Parenthood, of which she was the manager because she, filled the role of seeing, yeah, exactly. She saw an ultrasound of an abortion at her own clinic and realized, no, this is not a blob of tissue. This is a little baby fighting for its life, and it lost, unfortunately. And she said, I can't do this anymore.
It's one of those paradoxes of technology that the GE sonograms, which have been deployed to help with selective abortions throughout the third world, may also wind up being the undoing of abortion because the picture's so good.
Yeah.
People can see it. And it's a great thing in this way that the silent scream, which was the original, you know, anti-abortion, pro-life movie, that's dark, right? Because it's actual sonogram footage of babies being, you know, trying to bat away knives and things. Like, it's very dark and it's hard to watch. And, you know,
when you say it's hard to walk, do you mean it in the sense that it's just, it's not as clear though as an image?
Well, that too, but it's also, it's a dark thing, right?
Sure.
That's a rough thing. Now we have these photorealistic, beautiful, peaceful babies, right, that everyone can see that is now just flooding everywhere. And it's a much more positive way of making the same point that this is a life.
Sure. And that word, that word choice should never be abused as it was in Lincoln's day, the choice of slavery or the choice of, you know, killing unborn babies. Okay, we have 20 seconds for you to wrap up.
Yeah, so on that issue of choice, it is interesting. One last comparison to sort of shore up Betsy DeVos's point. It used to be location, right? You can enslave here or not there. Now it's time. This person can be killed if they're young enough, right? It's temporal. So that's going to be a whole different way of shaking it out and sorting it.
Sure. Dr. Matthew Meehan, his website is dc.hillsdale.edu. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
No, great talking with you.
Okay, bye-bye now.